Hey, and welcome to this week's edition of Racing Hotspot, coming out to you post-Iowa and Pocono. IndyCar is over in Iowa. My name's Devin Poslesny. I'm one of your co-hosts for this show. And sitting across from me here in the 603 United podcast studio, that's what we're going to call this now, is Mr. Jordan Jenkins. Jordan, how are you?
I'm doing good, Devin. Very hot.
Very hot?
Yeah.
Yeah, you brought back some of the heat from Pocono.
No, I didn't.
No, you did.
Nope.
No, you did. That's what I'm going with. Although it was hotter here.
Yeah, I was
going
to say it was hotter here than
I was hoping you were
going to
bring some back, some cool air.
We didn't really have cool air, so couldn't bring anything back.
So Jordan went to Pocono Raceway this weekend working for Essentially Sports as well as the Lucky Dog.
On track.
Lucky Dog on track. Thank you. We'll get to that. But real quick, we need to also touch on the IndyCar series because I realize the majority of the show is going to be talking about Pocono because Jordan was boots on the ground there. But we need to talk about IndyCar because they're one of our sports that we cover. So let's talk about that real quick. The NTT IndyCar Series had a doubleheader at Iowa this past weekend, which I found very interesting. I like it, but the timing of it, I thought about the logistics for a race team. They ran at 6 o'clock Saturday night and noon on Sunday. So if you wrecked out on Saturday night, you only had a handful of hours to get your car turned around. But anyways, two really good races over in Iowa. One of the things that they were experiencing and having trouble with was the high speeds in the corners, which were from NASCAR's partial repave of the corners in Iowa.
Yep.
I know we talked about that a couple weeks ago when NASCAR raced at Iowa. But IndyCar kind of took some things away to make downforce less on the cars. This way they weren't completely, you know, ripping up the racetrack. But anyways, good races all around. I'll go through the top three from both races. First for the Saturday race, it was Joseph Newgarden on third, Pato O'Ward second, and Scott McLaughlin with the W. Led 164 laps, earned 53 points, had two pit stops. He started second. So really good job by McLaughlin. For Sunday, we had McLaughlin finishing third, Alex Palou finishing second, and Will Power winning the race. He led 51 laps, so a lot less than McLaughlin did on Saturday night. But started 22nd, so that would explain why. He kind of had to chip his way forward. He earned 51 points. And his total time was less than McLaughlin. He ran the whole race in an hour and 26 minutes, whereas McLaughlin went an hour and 44. Now, Jordan, I know you saw the accident involving Stingray Rob.
Mm-hmm.
Happy to hear that he was released from the hospital and is, you know, resting well at home. But my goodness, what a crazy accident to see a car. I mean, this is kind of, unfortunately, the product of open-wheel racing. You see it sometimes in Formula One. You see it in IndyCar. You see it in the Wheel of Modified Tour, that when the two wheels touch, there's nothing necessarily protecting it from just launching. And that's what we saw Stingray Rob do. The part to this, though, that's scary for Stingray Rob was that he flipped and then barrel rolled down the back straight away and then slid on the side pod of the car. Like I said, glad to hear that he's okay and he's, you know, recovering and resting, but still a crazy, crazy accident. And if I'm not mistaken, we had another similar accident Saturday night where a driver kind of went up on another, if not this past Saturday, definitely in the past from Iowa. So high-speed ovals such as Iowa and, you know, Milwaukee and Gateway, they produce this close racing, and it results in sometimes wheels touching and cars getting a little bit of airtime. Trying to make sure I confirm that was on Saturday night. I think it might have actually been an old clip. But anyways, so IndyCar running in Iowa, pretty cool for them. Like I said, I like the whole doubleheader idea, especially from a fan point of view. You know, you go, you camp, you get two races, possibly three if the Indy Next was there. And it's pretty cool. So they're on to Ontario on July 21st, so this Sunday. Then they'll be in Illinois, and then they will be up in Portland, and then they'll run another doubleheader at the Milwaukee Mile at the end of August, August 31st and September 1st. Again, that's a 6 p.m. on Saturday and a 2:30 on Sunday, followed by the season finale at Nashville Super Speedway on the 15th. So, super cool for them. Season wrapping up over there. Jordan, do you have anything real quick I forgot to mention? Do you have anything regarding Short Track Saturday?
I do.
Okay.
So our second banner MRS event was this past Saturday at Wiscasset Speedway up in Maine. And huge congratulations to the 76 of Brett Meservey coming out with the win, his first career MRS victory and his first career win ever in a modified. Open wheel modified, so congrats to him on that. He runs really well in the modifieds. He just hasn't had the luck on his side. He ran Pro 4s last week at Hudson. And, rounding out the rest of the podium was Brian Roby and Mike Collins. Obviously, Brian Roby is a modified star in this region, running the MRS event here at Wiscasset. But Meservey actually told me on last Sunday in Hudson when he was running in the Pro 4s after his engine blew up at Star, so he wasn't able to make the feature in the Racers Honoring Racers event. And he told me he's probably out of the championship race in the MRS. But we released a point standings after Wiscasset. Mike Collins is our points leader, followed by Matt Swanson, who just 11 points back. And third would be Ryan Doucette. Fourth is Joey Jarvis. Fifth is Kurt Vigent. And sixth, the man I just told you said he's probably out of the playoff picture, or the playoff picture, the championship picture. Mm-hmm. And sixth in points is Brett Meservey. He has 98 points, so I'm going to try to do math real quick. If the leader has 146 points, Meservey has 98, how many points is that back?
What did you say, 98?
Yeah.
48.
So 48 points. We have, I mean...
Just so you know, I did use a calculator.
So 48 points, it's not, I mean, it's still very much in it. I mean,
how many races do you get if you win?
Ooh, I should know. Actually, I can check. Swanson got 50.
So if you win a race, here's the tricky part of points calculations. He wins a race that's 50, but where does his opponent finish?
Right.
You know, his opponent finishes second and he gets 48.
Well, and he does have the 25 of Matt Swanson, who is just, he's just a modified star wherever he is.
Right.
He runs 63 races this year when I talked to him at Star, but.
Goodness.
Yeah. And so you have all that, but he is sixth in points, got his first career win. So congrats to Brett. He actually contacted me yesterday saying, man, wish you were there. And I was like, hey, I thought you said you were out of the championship picture. Now look at you. You win the very next week in the MRS. But our next race is in 17 days from now, the Milton Cat 75 on Friday, August 2nd at Claremont Motorsports Park. We have, I mean, it feels like that was just our third points event, or second actual banner event, third points race, but our season's almost done. We got Claremont in a couple weeks. Then the week after, we got Lee. The week after that, we got Hudson. So three Granite State tracks on Race Day TV. And then September 1st is our second Challenge Cup race for the Races Running Races at Claremont Motorsports Park, September 1st. And then we have to wait a little bit for our championship race, October 19th, the Milton Cat Crown 75, back at New London Waterford Speed Bowl. So look forward to going back to the Waterford Speed Bowl. That's where our opener was, and it was a great time there.
Yeah, Always a good time down in Waterford. Again, we talked about this before, how that's a place I want to get to at some point. It's definitely a bucket list track. And who knows, maybe I'll be down there. Maybe I'll make the trip.
I also forgot to mention that Anthony Nocella was racing at Wiscasset with us. But unfortunately, didn't make it the heat or the feature because he hit the wall in practice.
Oh,
so
that's a bummer.
Anthony Nocella, we have 26 drivers listed on our point standing. Anthony Nocella is 26 with exactly 0 points.
That's my type of race, right? My type of season.
But that could be wrong because he didn't get points for the start feature, and he finished second at Star. Because that wasn't an MRS Modified Racing Series race. It was an MRS points event.
Gotcha. Yeah, my racing season has 0 points, too. That's what I was getting out there when I said that. But anyways, cool. I always, I love the MRS Series. We did a couple things with them. I even did what you're doing now. I did a PA job with them up in, I think it was Wiscasset, and it was just a lot of fun. It's a great series.
Yeah. Wiscasset was a track I was looking forward to going to, but obviously other plans arose.
Well, you were looking forward to going to, but getting there is the part that's the bummer.
Yeah.
Wiscasset's up from where we are.
About 3 hours.
Way up there, yeah. Now, I mean, it's a great track, and I love the family who runs it. They they're true racers, and their heart's in it, and they know what they want, and they know what to do in order to keep, fans coming and everything. So it's definitely a great track to get up to. Not to mention, it is fast, and it's wide, and we usually cover the Legends cars up there, so those cars whip around that racetrack. So it's definitely a really good racetrack. Put it on the bucket list for sure. Any other things on Short Track Saturday?
No.
Okay.
So that would be easier, but I wasn't at any, so no, I couldn't really talk about much. I just know everything with the MRS.
It's fine. So let's talk about Pocono, and we'll start with in order. First of all, actually, before we get to talking about specific races, Jordan, tell us about your experience this weekend, obviously working for Essentially Sports and being as an essential media member in the NASCAR world. Driving down to Pocono. Tell us everything as soon as you got in the car at home to getting out of the car at home.
Well, so I left my house 9:30 in the morning Thursday morning and didn't get to the track to pick up my credential till 4:30 that day. So 7-hour drive, which would have been a lot less. But obviously, everyone knows New York traffic's not everyone's favorite. But left. I came back here yesterday, left my hotel at almost 10 a.m., got back at 4, so I didn't hit any traffic this time, so that was nice. I hit a little bit, but nothing like Thursday. But, growing up a NASCAR fan and stuff, having that be my first essential media experience, it's kind of weird. Because there's obviously certain rules. So, a part of me wants to still be a fan of it, like take pictures with drivers and autographs, but I can't or I lose my credential. So, I don't want to do that. But, it's definitely cool for if people want to get into NASCAR, like work in NASCAR, it's definitely on the media side, definitely one I would suggest. It took a little bit getting used to. Part of it was probably because I'd never been to Pocono Raceway before, so it was kind of my first time going to a track that wasn't Loudon and getting this media experience, so I kind of had to get myself familiarized with the infield, which is massive at Pocono, 2.5 miles. So, it was definitely a good time. That AC in the media center came in handy, especially on Saturday, definitely.
I believe it.
Saturday and Sunday definitely came into effect. We got free catered meals too, so that was always nice. I didn't have to spend however much money on food at Pocono, however how much. So I don't know the price, but
usually I'm pretty sure it's consistent with everything else. Yeah. But regardless, saving money.
But yeah, it was great, kind of being able to finally do that, do driver interviews and stuff. It didn't take me as long to get familiarized with the infield and like being a media member as I thought. Like I was kind of used to it by the time Truck Series practice happened on that Friday. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Definitely a good thing. Definitely felt weird driving my car through the infield tunnel. For sure.
No, that's awesome. I mean, it's pretty cool. Jordan was sending me video clips from all weekend, and it was great to see, you know, him doing what he loves and having fun with it. And it was, like I said, it was just a lot of fun to be able to kind of follow along, even if I was slightly jealous.
Yeah, you did. Well, you didn't say tell me to send you videos, so I was like, oh, I'll send him any video I have. Here we go.
No, I loved it. It was awesome, you know, and it was cool to see, you know, you living out your dream down there, and hopefully you get more opportunities like that.
Yeah, it looks like we might either be doing Daytona next month or Atlanta, and so they kick off the playoffs. So, but that's still up in the air, obviously still like a month and a half away. So,
for sure. No, and especially since now you're in the system, you know, as a NASCAR media member, next time would be a little easier to, you know, just say, yep, I'm signing up for Daytona instead of creating a new account. And
I could have kept in character. I could have worn my media credential to the podcast just because I still have it because it has my name on it and everything. But I could have just kept stayed in character. Could have just had the whole thing on.
Whatever. No, it was definitely cool to, like I said, cool to be able to see it, and I'm happy you got that experience.
One thing I didn't even know is I wish I now did this for truck qualifying and Xfinity qualifying, because I was allowed to stand right on pit road during Cup qualifying.
On pit road or behind the wall?
On pit road.
Oh my goodness.
Like that picture, I sent you a picture of Kyle Busch's car. That was actively during qualifying. Like there was cars on track qualifying when I took that picture.
I thought that was pre-qualifying.
No, there was three cars in front of Kyle Busch before he went up for qualifying. So that was, he was literally sitting in his car when I took that picture. And I also have a video of kind of like walking with Blaney's car, like on pit road. I don't know if you can see a car go past in this at all, but.
So let me ask you, for those people out there who, you know, may not know, I understand that, you know, regular media members have their numbered vests. Right. But for you, who was a first timer, might become a regular, but right now is a first timer, did you get a numbered vest?
I did.
Okay. Did you have to return it at the end of the weekend? Okay.
Yeah.
So it was like a temporary.
I was actually the only one from Essentially Sports that had one, because I was the only one that was attended the Zoom meeting with NASCAR the week before.
Gotcha.
Or not the week before, that week, but last week. It's now been last week. And so I got a media vest, which was able to get me on pit road, if I was being honest.
What number were you?
159.
Oh, 159. Not bad.
Yeah. So I had, so that's what allowed me to get like up close to pit road. Cause like, obviously I was being allowed to be like behind the wall in pit road during the race, but I was been able to like be up close to the pit wall during the race. Mm-hmm. And like during qualifying, I was able to practice. I was not able to because they're sitting on their pit stalls, but obviously qualifying, they're lined up. But, it was definitely something I'd want to do again. And it definitely would go to Pocono again, whether it's as a media member or just as a fan, because that's a really nice area, really nice track, and they do a lot of fan engagement, a lot of fan stuff all weekend.
So let me ask you real quick, because this was something I was thinking about. Obviously, you know, TV media is, you know, the big radio and TV, right? Those are the media that are getting right now. Mm-hmm. And there's a possibility that you don't know what that NBC camera is, if they're live or not. Were you told by anybody that you need to like yield, or was it just common sense?
I was not told anything. You can kind of tell, because I honestly didn't know this, but it was kind of cool because the amount of times I ran into Kim Coon on a Saturday and Sunday, it was a lot. So there was times like she was kind of standing like kind of next to me, and like there was someone standing in front of her from NBC that it's not really a camera, but it's like a TV screen they're holding.
Oh,
with a stand,
yeah.
And it's pointed at her, so she sees what's on to the screen actively on NBC.
It's what I think it's like the program and some stats or like something
and
like
then,
that.
And
like
in the corner, you can see like the picture that NBC has or USA has actively, so when she's actively interviewing a driver, she knows how the frame looks.
Gotcha.
So, and you can kind of tell because she's talking like the same. Well, MRN doesn't have a camera, but I can tell it is kind of funny when I walk past. I'm going to blank on his name. But the pit reporter for MRN, it's kind of funny when you walk past him and you can he's talking to in the microphone like he's talking to himself. But obviously, you know he's not. It's just he doesn't have a – like MRN is all, the radio station. So right. They don't have any cameras that they need. So it's kind of like, oh, he's talking to himself. But you realize, oh, he's
– That's pretty cool.
So that's it's definitely cool. Cool, like, how you see that, especially, like, being outside the Infield Care Center, which I was for, like, 20 minutes because it just happened to be – I was trying to get an interview with Todd Gillen, and then that's when the whole big wrecks happened, and then it was more wrecks. It was like, oh, my God. So I was just like, oh, I guess I'll wait for more.
And now with that, obviously, you know, I've seen video clips on YouTube where it's kind of like you have, let's say, Kyle Busch, and it's just whoever can get their sentence out quicker, right? Yeah,
it is exactly
but,
like
that. So – But, like, throughout the weekend, though, you were obviously there for, let's say, 20 minutes. Did you notice at all or did, like, the group at all kind of build a rhythm where it was like, okay, Bob Pockris goes, then you go, and then so-and-so goes, and then Bob asks another question, or is it just kind of like a free-for-all?
Kind of like a free-for-all.
Because I can tell that, you know, in the video clips you sent me, it was very respectful. You know, Bob would ask a question. And then after the end of Kyle finishing it, there was like that 2 second period of then you jumped in. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't like it was like, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, know? It's a little bit. I mean, some people are also there. They don't really, they just try to get the whole thing on camera. Mm-hmm. Like I did the same thing, but I kind of I closed it just to get my like have my question in there. But it's definitely like that. Like, there was, I was with at the Gregson and Chastain interview at the Infield Care Center, too, when they wrecked in stage one, and I never got a question out. So,
you obviously got video of people asking questions. Yes, so you got information, but you just, you personally.
I was not able to get a question correct. But, yeah, it's definitely like that. Press conference, it's a little more organized, you know. Like, I raised my hand, and the Matt Humphries, I think his name is, the one that hosts the press conferences. Got me, like, he was like, oh, this person, then, like, Bob, like, this person, and then, he, like, so he kind of, that's more organized, but definitely outside the Infield Care Center after a race, it's definitely who can ever ask a question first.
I saw that you had interviewed Christian Eckes as well, and he was kind of walking, and then you, the video clip was, hey, and then he turned and looked, like, it was kind of like, you were like, real quick, let me grab you, so I can understand, that's definitely not a job for the, I don't want to say the polite and shy, but you definitely have to be outgoing and kind of like, aggressive is not the right word, but you know what I mean.
And it's all about, I learned this because I was talking to Parker Kligerman off camera. I did interview him after Xfinity qualifying, but he was talking to me about where's the best to do interviews. And Claire, I was actually partnered with Claire B. Lang all this past week, and she kind of told me, like, yeah, there's a bullpen on pit road for after the races, which I didn't know that's what it was called, but that's where the media, where I interviewed Ross Chastain, Eckes, Denny Hamlin, all Gary Byron on pit road, that's considered the bullpen.
Gotcha.
Which I didn't know that was the terminology for. I just thought it was pit road.
That's really nice because now you're not running up and down pit road.
Right. You go to one exactly spot. Where they are.
And yeah. But go on.
But, yeah, it's all about when's the right time. Because, like, I saw media people trying to interview Zane Smith before truck qualifying as he was sitting by his truck waiting to qualify. Mm. He wasn't in his truck, but he was standing outside it. And, like, his PR guy was like, yeah, it's not the best time.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah, no, I get that. Because it's the same thing as, like, athletics.
Right. TV, like, obviously, they do it on TV, but that's different because they're kind of the priority, obviously. So.
Right.
But for me doing it through the social media outlets and essentially sports website and all that, it's more about when's the right time and not like after Xfinity qualifying when any of you saw the Creed Parker Kligerman, they weren't doing anything. I mean, obviously they were doing something that makes it sound like they weren't doing anything, but
they're going back to the camper.
Obviously, like that was a good time because they weren't, their race was 3 hours beforehand. Like, so
yeah, it was kind of a little bit more relaxed. Pit crews had already gotten the information to work on the car. Yeah.
And a lot of the Cup Series guys, they do media availability, which I personally didn't know the schedule. I didn't know if I could get it. So I kind of just walked after on Saturday, after I interviewed Sheldon Creed and Parker Kligerman, I just happened to walk into the media center because I was like, oh, Cup Series practice is in like 20 minutes, so I might as well just sit in the media center, wait for that to kick off. And then I walk into the press conference room, and then there's like 8 drivers in there. Bubba Wallace was in there, Kyle Busch, Ty Gibbs, Elliott Larson, Kozlowski, they're all in there. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get everybody, but you can kind of walk around there. And then, like, I think in that one sitting, I asked Chase Elliott and Ty Gibbs before practice qualifying. Mm-hmm. And I got Elliott like 5 minutes before Group A, but he was Group B, so he was just sitting in there.
Yeah, so
he was chilling. And then after qualifying, they did the same thing. I don't quite remember who was in there at the time, but I did get Brad Kozlowski after the qualifying run, like right before Ty Gibbs' press conference for winning the pole. So it's kind of all the Cup Series guys are more media available, and it's kind of like the truck and Xfinity. You kind of have to find them in the garage and see if they can.
Well, obviously, I feel like more or less that's like the Cup guys are obviously the more, I don't want to say wanted, but like, they're the more focused. That's mm-hmm. a good word for it. Not wanted, but focused. And because of that, their weekend is structured where it's kind of like, okay, Chase Elliott is going to be here, here, qualify, then here and here.
Yeah.
And then he's done. Whereas the other guys are just kind of like, hey, grab my shoulder so if you need something.
I didn't know if there's people in the front desk at the media center. I probably could ask them if there's like media availability or like a schedule of it. I didn't know. So that caused it my first time. But now I know the obviously. I knew they did that anyway. I just didn't know if it's like, I thought it was always like after qualifying, not before practice qualifying and after. Mm-hmm. But yeah, definitely takes getting used to being involved in all that. But it's definitely, I don't want to say it's hard. It's not easy, but it's not hard though, if that makes sense. It's a little bit of both.
You just gotta
if you know if you know when the right time is, because obviously having a reputation and at that level is important. You don't want to lose that. And like me being a new media member, like I didn't want to over push myself,
right?
So
right, and it's like, you know, the reputation of like Bob Pockrass.
Right,
he can ask questions that you
whoever
and, yeah, he can ask questions maybe you necessarily couldn't. You know, meaning like he has the rapport with drivers.
It's not necessarily that. Like I can ask, because I talked to Claire B about it, and she, like the terms of how tough the questions are, matters is knowing what a time and a place to get a driver interview. Mm. So like the Cup guys, I was trying to find them after qualifying, like at their haulers, but they were like nowhere. So I was like, I'll just go to the media center. So, and especially where like, I was gonna try to get Tyler Reddick, but he was like swarmed. Mm. Like Chase Elliott usually gets swarmed by fans for autographs, so I was like, I'm not gonna try to get that. I'll just let him try to get his autographs in and go back into his hauler. Yeah, so.
I get that.
But it's kind of a different feeling too, because like I walked past like everybody. I walked past Marty Snyder a lot, Kim Kuhn, Parker Kligerman, Saturday and Sunday. I've walked past all the Truck Series teams. I happened pre-race on pit road for Sunday, I walked past Richard Childress and Joe Gibbs just randomly, and I was just like, oh, hey. Yeah. like obviously I saw Bob Pockrass Friday, Saturday, Sunday, so it's like you see like everybody that you see all the time on TV, and mm-hmm. it's just like weird how often you see them when you're in person.
Well, and especially since now at that level as a media member, you guys are in a sense you're the same. Mm-hmm. And also just like normal people.
And it's something I learned too, is it was great how every media member, like even though if they work for different outlets, they're always there to help each other. Mm-hmm. So like when I was a reporter for Front Stretch, we're the only ones waiting for Todd Gilliland until the big Kyle Busch and Corey LaJoy thing happened, which we'll obviously get to when we actually talk about the race in general.
Right.
So then Bob Pockrass came out, more Front Stretch people came out, obviously, the NBC and crew and then MRN crew came out. So then it was kind of like, oh, no. Like,
are there different points like NBC and MRN kind of get their own area and then there's the general?
So in the Infield Care Center, obviously, when they interview them under like an easy up, they have the backdrop.
Oh,
we are
yes.
right to the left. We are to.
I saw that in the background.
If they're standing here, we're to their right. We're sitting like right to the driver's right on a little media only thing outside the care center. And then so they'll go to the TV, they go to the NBC, MRN first, and then they'd come to
the general.
Like a Bob Pockrass, mm-hmm. and then like me or whoever.
Kind of like the bullpen, Claire said. Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty much like that. So they would come to us, and so it's kind of different. I mean, it's cool how they like after we interview. After I got the Todd Gillen interview, we were waiting for like Kyle Busch come out, Stenhouse, Burton, because everyone that was involved that couldn't finish. They were showing some people from Front Stretch were showing the rest of us video of the wreck. So we, because like it was like that's kind of cool how like even though it's kind of they're not like it's competition, but like it's kind of cool how like people from different media outlets like help each other. And it's like yeah, this is what happened, and
yeah, we're all here to work together.
Yeah.
For a common.
And it is kind of funny to think how what media members truly think of other drivers. So
well, I mean, and going back to what you just said about like not competition, but your competition. But if let's say you show me a video of an accident, you might have this question, but I might think of another question.
Mm-hmm.
And then guess what? Now we both have each other's question, and it's like, oh, I like that question.
Yeah.
And now I can use that information, you know, because it's my video on my phone. And you know, now I can use that.
For the press conferences to happen with me, I was going to ask a question to Cole Custer about what went like with his first Xfinity win of the season coming at Pocono on Saturday. What it does for possibly the future with his obviously the future unknown, but someone took that question before I could get it. So I was like,
I was just going to ask it. Is there ever a point where you had like a question lined up and you're like, I'm going to ask so-and-so and then, and then somebody
else.
So when you go into those press conferences, obviously you go in with like, or you go to, let's say Kyle Busch, he comes over to the bullpen. You go over with maybe two or three questions. This way it's not like, well,
you go, yeah, you
there goes my question.
It's like, ah, now I'm just here.
Now I'm just standing here.
Like Corey Heim, I didn't want to ask a question because I kind of just wanted to sit in my first like actual press conference and kind of get the gist of it, see how it goes. And then I was ready for Cole Custer's. I had like, both of my questions taken. And then Jonathan Hash's press conference, Brian Blaney's crew chief, my question was taken. But so I kind of asked the same thing to Blaney, but kind of worded it differently. Actually, no, I didn't even ask the same question to Blaney that I was going to ask. But, yeah, it's definitely, like, being at the press conferences is cool because that's just a different feeling what I'm used to. So it's kind of cool. It's that's definitely awesome. Organized.
That's awesome. What would be one thing, before we move on, what would be one thing if you got a chance to, or you go to the next race, whatever, whenever that is, what's something you would do differently? It can be anything from equipment to
definitely
learning equipment. To anything.
Definitely equipment, because I just used my phone. Like, the audio was good. I mean, you saw the video. The audio was good without that was without a mic. That was just my camera audio. But
yeah, it was good.
Definitely for, like, I had a gimbal, but the only thing is it, like, drains my phone battery. So I constantly had my phone charged in my pockets. Whenever I sit in the media center, I charge it because I didn't want to be outside and on pit road the whole time because it's like I can go back inside, go in the media center, watch the USA feed, and then go out. I see like
drink water, get
food, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And but definitely like try to get a mic, especially I got lucky enough. But all the times I did an outside interview outside the infield care center, that the track was not green.
Mm.
It was under caution, so I was only wondering if without a mic, if they would even be able to hear what the driver was saying. If
let alone the facility, like Loudon's care center is right next to turn four.
Right.
Daytona's kind of more in the middle. Bristol, you can't hear anything.
Right. Pocono, Pocono, you can hear the cars are on track, except when they're not when they're on the front stretch, you can't. But everywhere else, obviously, because the track's so big.
Yep.
You can hear them coming out of turn three, but if they're on the in turn one, tunnel turn, you can't hear. Like it doesn't even sound like there's cars on track. You can barely hear them.
So but, what would so okay?
And definitely then probably grab get a mic, like even if it's like a small mic that's just like Bluetooth under my phone.
Would you consider, like, I saw Bob Pockrass, he uses a gimbal.
I do have a gimbal.
Would you? So were you using a gimbal for your phone? Okay, but my question is
sometimes I was, sometimes I was, just because, like I said, the gimbal just drains my phone battery, so I didn't really want to sit and charge my phone like every hour.
We got to get you a gimbal that has its own battery
because. It could.
I got one sitting in my office.
Oh.
Dang it. Could have let you borrow it. But no, but I mean, like, Bob Pockrass uses one of the DJI Pocket gimbals.
I have, too. I have a DJI one.
Okay. But no, I'm saying, like, but it, as you probably saw, it's its own camera.
Yeah.
So he's not using his phone.
Yeah, so my phone's attached to the stand of it, and it kind of, and then it connects to Bluetooth, so I can use the stand, and it moves my phone this way or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But like my interviews that I did on pit road, I just used my phone. I just held my phone like this.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's definitely one of those things that, like, even like, I don't want to say I can relate, but like,
but
I can understand where certain situations, you know, the easiest option might be a monopod with a video camera and a microphone on top of the camera. But when you have to up and move, it's a lot easier to just throw your phone in your pocket and move.
Right. And then, yeah, definitely.
So it's, yeah, I mean, if and when you do this again, let me know, because I could probably help you out with some equipment. I have one of the DJI ones that is just, it has its own battery, so it doesn't pull off your phone, but regardless. But no,
it's, one thing that is cool too is,
it's awesome.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, more media people showed up. So Friday there was still a good amount, but not much. So, like, when I interviewed Chastain, there was, like, probably me and two other people.
Mm.
It was me, Bob, and one other person, I'll say. And then when I interviewed Ekis, it was actually just me that got to him. And then Xfinity, for when I interviewed Allgaier and William Byron post-race, it was me and, like, four others for Allgaier, and me and, like, six others or five others with Byron. And then when I interviewed Denny on Pit Road, it was me and, like, 14 other people. So I was able to, lucky enough that I'd be one of the first ones to Denny, but I wasn't the first one to ask a question. So I was like dead center of Denny. I was like right in front of him.
That's cool. That's still pretty cool.
Yeah. So definitely, it's tough to get, it's definitely a hassle, especially trying to get cup guys. It's easier when they're in the media center, cause it's obviously everyone's kind of walking around to get different, to try to get every driver. Mm-hmm. But definitely when they're on pit road after a cup race, it's definitely like kind of just, you kind of just blurred it out. It's like, oh,
right. That makes
like
sense.
Right after Denny was done answering a question, like as he was like just said the last word, I said my question. It's like, because you just don't know.
Like I said, it's definitely not for the faint of heart. Like I would probably overthink that and be like, I'm trying to be a nice guy. Finish your sentence.
Yeah, we're like shoulder. The Denny interview, we're like shoulder to shoulder with everybody. We're like, yeah. So right after Kligerman interviewed Denny, Denny's PR guy goes like this, like, oh, have Adam. So we're all like, oh, we're all like shoulder to shoulder, and it's like, oh.
that's so cool. All right, so truck race real quick before we talk about the race itself. Here's your top three. Finishing third was Christian Ekis. Grant Infinger, totally butchered that. Sorry, Grant. He finished second. Ekis finished third, as I mentioned, and Corey Heim got the win. Led 55 laps and completed all 70. He started second. So let's talk about the truck race. I caught most of it on TV, but obviously you had a little bit of a different experience than I did. So let's talk about it, because I have something I want to talk about, but go ahead.
Obviously, the truck, it was a Corey Heim domination, led 55 of 70, but I wouldn't say it was a follow the leader type thing, because Ekis and Heim battle stage one and stage two, and they were side by side for I think like the first five laps of the truck race, and the track was very racy with them. I don't know if it's because the sun was going down or not going down, but it was like evening. It was like 5:30.
It was getting cooler.
Yeah. So even though Heim was dominating, there was still like every truck around the field was still like side by side battling it out, three wide, four wide. But definitely the restarts play a huge story. Definitely Clean Air does as well at Pocono. I know that because Harrison Byrne told me on Sunday when I asked him how good of a car he had, if he had a better car in the short run or long run. And he said it doesn't matter if you get clean air or not. Hmm. So definitely restarts and getting clean air is definitely a telltale story, especially for the truck series, especially track position too, which is all three series. Obviously, track position is key at every track, but except maybe a super speedway, because I don't know if you really want to be up front during a super speedway. But definitely clean air played a factor. Corey Heim, obviously, Corey Heim and Christian Ekis have been kind of like the story in the truck series, because they're both battling it out for wins. Ekis has three or four wins. Heim now has five. So it's definitely a battle between them for the regular season, which as of right now, Christian Ekis is the leader in the regular season points, but playoff points, Ekis has the lead. But, yeah, definitely – big win for Corey Heim, especially with all the stuff going on with him about getting all the Xfinity rides with Sam Hunt and 23-11 last week, or I think it was last week at Nashville that Corey Heim got the 23-11 ride. So definitely big win for him in what's been a dominant season for him. Mm. But I definitely, even though there was he led all but 15, I thought the track was racy and the trucks were very racy. Definitely battles throughout the rest of the field besides 1 and 2.
Yeah, it was definitely a good race from what I saw. A little bit of weather towards the end, less than 10 laps to go.
Yeah, they weren't lying when they said it rained at some part of the track and wasn't, because when the caution came out for rain, Corey Heim said on the radio that it was effing rain pouring in turn 3. I'm standing on pit road by, I think, Nick Sanchez's pit stall. Mm-hmm. Or right by the start-finish line. Whoever's pit stall was by the start-finish line, I don't quite remember. But I was just standing there, and it was like, oh, it's raining over there? That's cool. It's nice and sunny over here. And then it came out, and then they were like, oh, we're good to go. Like, they just dry the track quickly in turn 3 because that's all it rained. So they were like, okay, let's line it back up. As they were back on track, the rain that was in turn 3 hit pit road. So they were like, oh, bring it back onto pit road. Jeez. And then right after Corey Heim took the white, and the rain started again. Like, it was a very light rain, and I look up in the sky, it was like sunny. It was like, where's this rain coming from? But yeah, definitely the weather's weird there. Definitely interesting weather they get there. No one lying when they say when that happens.
For sure, for sure. Cool. No, I mean, like I said, I think it was a good race overall, and
a whole 10-minute rain delay, pretty much. Mm. 10-minute each rain delay, I should say.
Yeah. No, it was good. It was a good race, good finish, good ending. Real quick, any other thoughts on the truck race before we move on to Xfinity?
I do not have anything.
Okay. So the Xfinity Series also raced at Pocono on Saturday.
Oh,
and
they did.
Here's your top three. William Byron finishing third, Justin Allgaier second, and Cole Custer, as we mentioned, with the W. I personally did not see anything from this race, so I apologize. Sorry. But you know what? I covered IndyCar, so you get Xfinity.
Yeah, so I really think the Xfinity race is probably the best race of the weekend. I mean, that doesn't have to say the truck race is bad or the cup race is bad, because I thought both of them were good. But the Xfinity race, I just think the battles for the lead, it was pretty much ongoing throughout the whole race. There was always a battle for the lead. Allgaier pretty much, I think, Allgaier dominated stage one. So stage one was kind of a dominant performance, but stage one was 20 laps. Mm. I mean, they're 20 laps, but Pocono was 2.5, so like 20 laps is like, what, 50 miles?
30 minutes.
50 yeah. miles, something oh, like yeah, that. Yeah. So, I mean, the race was called the Explorer of the Poconos 225, but the race was 90 laps.
Right.
Because of the 2.5 miles. But Allgaier won stage one, Custer won stage two, and then obviously Custer ended up getting the race win. But stage three, I really think, was just the best part of the race. Custer, Allgaier, and Byron battling three wide for the lead, pretty lap to lap. Like, it was, and a lot of strategy was involved. Allgaier actually stretched the fuel window, and a lot of people didn't think he would actually make it. Mm. So kind of like a Joey Logano in Nashville, that Allgaier stretching the fuel window for, like, there was no weather in the area or anything. He was just like, we're going to try to stay out in front. Cautions definitely played a he did say in my interview with him after the race that the cautions definitely probably did help him in a way, but they didn't know where they were at. So they knew they had a shot anyway. Mm-hmm. But the cautions definitely helped them save fuel, especially where there was quite a few cautions in stage three. Obviously, we had some drama at the end. We had Chandler Smith pretty yelling at Sam Ayer, which I was so honored to have walked right past. I was walked right past that the whole while I was walking up to trying to get to Allgaier and Byron's car. I was walked right past Chandler Smith swearing at Sam Ayer, so I will not say what he said. But I heard word for word pretty much the whole exchange of what Mayer said and Chandler Smith. So
there was some bleep, 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 bleep,
yeah,
bleep.
Kligerman and Allmendinger were having a conversation after the race, but there was a friendly conversation. Obviously, they had a little issue, not an issue with each other, but they're best friends. So they were kind of more talking. Like, I heard Almendinger say, if I lift it, I'm wrecking everybody in the field behind me if I lift. So I don't know quite when that situation happened, because there was a lot. But Shane Van Gisbergen was actually having a quiet day for an oval or triangle. I don't really want to call Pocono an oval. But Shane Van Gisbergen was having a good run until that one of Sam Mayer made contact with him in the tunnel turn and spun him. But, man, that battle, Custer, Allgaier, and Byron was just amazing. I heard the crowd from Pitt Road, like, they were actively on their feet, like, cheering for what that battle that was happening.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, like I said,
because you can, obviously, Poconos, I mean, I can't attest to Daytona, you would be able to, but when they're on the back stretch, you can't see them.
Depends on, yeah, no, I gotcha.
But the tunnel turn, I think, is the, based on my knowledge, because I did get to go into the grandstands like before, it looks like the only place you can't see at Pocono is the tunnel turn, which is called the tunnel turn for a reason. I guess
it's probably because it's a very flat corner, and it looks like, honestly, compared to the infield, it's like lower.
Yeah. So I was standing at the start finish line for pretty much all three races, and I wasn't in the media center because Victory Lane is like right behind me, the new Victory Lane at Pocono, may add. And there's a big screen right on top, so you kind of just turn around and look at it the whole time. So when they're not, so it definitely, the crowd was definitely into the Xfinity race, and the stands for the Xfinity race were pretty packed. I'd probably say like 3/4 full. But yeah, definitely a good Xfinity race, but they always usually are good anyway, for no matter where they are, it seems like. So Sheldon Creed finished 4th, but I got to talk to him, and he had a lot of confidence going in because obviously that was his second career pole. But ended up finishing 4th. Taylor Gray did double duty from the trucks, and Xfinity finished 5th. So good run for him and the 19 car. So, but it was good for Cole Custer getting that win. He was the points leader without a win, but so now he has a win. So he's officially locked in. He was practically locked in anyway, but he was officially locked in with the win. But yeah, great battle between Custer, Allgaier, and Byron, all the stage three. And Byron actually battled back from losing his whole tire carcass in stage two, early in stage two. His whole tire came off, the whole tire carcass. So he ended up battling back and finishing 3rd.
That's awesome. That's awesome. No, I mean, like I said, I lied. The only part of the race that I did see was the video clip of the arguing on pit road.
Yes.
But other than that, I didn't see much. But no, I mean, it, as you said, the Xfinity Series always puts on a great race there, and great race anywhere, honestly.
Mm-hmm. And Dawson Cram in the 74, he was the first caution of the day. He took a hard hit in turn 1. I completely destroyed the back end of his car. But I guess that is Pocono. A lot of hard hits at Pocono because of how fast the turns are. Especially turn 1.
Yeah.
They fly into turn 1, so.
I believe it. So, any other thoughts on Xfinity?
No.
Okay. So, Cup Series ran on Sunday. Here's your top 3. Alex Bowman finishing 3rd. Denny Hamlin finishing 2nd. And Ryan Blaney with the W. Led 44 laps. Started 8th. Completed all 160. So, Jordan's got notes.
A whole bunch of notes that the perks of being a media member, the media center gives you.
Just when I thought we were going to keep this under an hour. I'm just kidding. Anyways, Jordan, tell us your thoughts on the Cup race on Sunday.
It was your classic Cup Series from Pocono with the next-gen cars. It was very strategic. So there was 8 lead changes throughout the race. Blaney led 44, which was actually all the last 44 laps. Denny Hamlin led 31. Ty Gibbs led twice for a total of 21 laps. Keselowski led 20. Chris Buescher led 19. Martin Truex Jr. led 14. Josh Berry led 8. And Joey Logano led 3. But Truex won stage 1. Hamlin won stage 2. Blaney won stage 3, the race. So you had 3 different stage winners, which I always like to see. I mean, it's always cool to see that. But quite a lot of penalties. One storyline to take away from the Cup Series race was the speeding in Section 7 on pit road. But the drivers did say on the pre-race track they always go when they always go down pit road, they weren't sure about that section. I don't know how much NASCAR penalized in Section 7. I don't think they did much at all. But I think at one point, every car that pitted on the lead lap, which I think was 30 at the time, 28 of them were speeding on Section 7. 28. So if NASCAR really wanted to, 28 cars could have gone sent to the rear for speeding on pit road, which really wouldn't have done anything because, you know, they're kind of just all restart anyway, probably in the same place. But unfortunately, Kyle Busch probably had his worst weekend of the season, which kind of says a lot right now. He had a steering issue in practice and qualifying, did not qualify too well. I will double check and see exactly where he qualified, but not a good weekend from the start for him. He ended up qualifying 24th. So just to put into perspective, Austin Dillon qualified in front of him. Eric Jones, the Legacy, we know Legacy is a Tier 3 Toyota. Eric Jones qualified in front of him. And let's see. And actually, before I even get any further, Zane Smith qualified 9th. So he had speed. Unfortunately, he did not get any stage points in stage 1 or 2, but probably gives the team confidence that they can come up to the track and show speed.
Right.
But I have a lot of penalties on the Sun Faction seat. So pre-race, Kyle Busch penalized for unapproved adjustments. Corey LaJoie also qualified pre-race, unapproved adjustments. Justin Haley, Kyle Busch, Ryan Preece, Austin Dillon, and Ross Chastain all were penalized for pitting before pit road is open. Carson Osvar got penalized for equipment interference. Harrison Burton for safety violation. Todd Gilliland got caught speeding on pit road. J.J. Haley got a choose violation penalty, which I don't think you really see too much in that rule.
And I would assume that was probably he clipped the box or something like that. But anyways, go on.
And then Kyle Busch, his second penalty, pitting before pit road is open. Corey LaJoie speeding on pit road. Then Austin Dillon, host of our Kyle Busch again. And Todd Gilliland pitting before pit road is open. So that's 3 times Kyle Busch is penalized for pitting before pit road was open. And then on lap 119, this is all lap 119 under caution. Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, Ty Gibbs, and Daniel Suarez was all caught speeding on pit road.
That's crazy.
And they all came out 1, 2, 3, 4 on the pit road, and they all got caught speeding on pit road. So that was kind of when the race kind of went crazy. It was kind of hectic because during that time, you had Todd Gilliland's brakes go out and get a hard hit into turn one. And then lap 122, Austin Cindric, Corey LaJoie, Kyle Busch, A.J. Allmendinger, Harrison Burton, Ryan Preece, and A.J. Allmendinger, or Ricky Stenhouse Jr., I mean, were all involved in that big wreck in turn one. And then 128, Michael McDowell, John Hunter Nemechek, and Zane Smith all having an issue. So this was all with 12 laps. In 12 laps, you have 4 cars speeding on pit road, all that were 1, 2, 3, 4, that would be on the restart. And then you had 8 cars in incidents. And then shortly after, 6 laps later, Ty Gibbs blew an engine. So it was kind of, it went hectic. I don't know what happened, but stage 3 was like, oh, it was
crazy.
Full moon, I came out even though it was sunny. But
hey, just because it's sunny doesn't mean the moon is now. It's still up there.
But like I said, 8 lead changes. Ryan Blaney led all the last 44. So good for him because obviously that's where a lot of the cautions were happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I think another storyline, which I didn't find out until after the Cup race, was the Xfinity cars were actually faster than the Cup cars. But again, a lot of the tracks, the Xfinity cars are usually faster than the Cup cars anyway.
Yeah.
So, but Pocono was one of those tracks that the Xfinity cars were once again faster overall than the Cup cars. But yeah, a lot of strategy. Ryan Blaney, kind of a significance. He said in the press conference, getting his 12th career win. He just so happens to be in the 12th car. So Ryan Blaney's definitely a numbers guy. Ryan Blaney's second win of the year. Team Penske's fourth since St. Louis, so fourth in last month, all with all three of their drivers locked in. Ryan Blaney winning twice at Iowa, at Pocono, Logano at Nashville, and Cindric at St. Louis, which would have been almost was going to be Blaney. It was his second victory and seventh top 10 finish in 15 races at Pocono Raceway. Denny Hamlin, who finished second, posted his 23rd top 10 finish in 35 races at Pocono. This is his ninth top 10 finish in 2024. Alex Bowman posted his fifth top 10 finish in 15 races at Pocono. Obviously, he had a real chance to go back-to-back. Carson Hocevar, who finished 17th, was the highest finishing rookie. And now the point standings with Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott, it gets even closer as Chase Elliott leads the point standings by just 3 points over Kyle Larson. And Denny Hamlin is 20 points back of that, so Hamlin closed in on that as well. But I'm going to try to... So overall, the 37 cars entered this race.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to count real second. 13 cars did not finish.
He looks like Larry McReynolds over here, folks. He's got like papers all over the place. He's got his phone.
I know,
next
I'm not
to
used
him.
To this. He's I figured so, I'd use them. I walked out with the media set with them, so I was like, when we do this podcast, am I going to use all this?
He gets so much information. Next week's show is going to be the most boring show ever.
I'm not going to have all these stats, so I'm not going to. But 26 cars ended up finishing the race out of 37. Or, sorry, 24 finished out of 37. And half of those were because of accidents. Actually, more than half. Nine of them were because of accidents. Other one, like Daniel Hemric didn't finish because of a suspension issue. Cody Ware overheated. J.J. Ely had a fuel pump issue. And Ty Gibbs blew his engine. So, the average speed was 123 miles per hour. Which I don't know. I don't think that's right. Because on the front, there's no way they're going 123 miles per hour down the front.
Yeah, but the corners might be evening or leveling.
Well, you also add in the slow cars.
True,
but time of race was 3 hours and 13 minutes, just in case you wanted to know, and 59 seconds. There was eight cautions for 34 laps. But I mean, I think eight lead changes among eight drivers is kind of cool. Because you had eight different drivers lead. Ty Gibbs led twice, which was the most out of any time, twice. Ryan Blaney led the most laps at 44. Hamlin second with 31. But, I mean, what else can you say about Denny Hamlin at Pocono? Obviously, he didn't get his eighth career win, but he's obviously the all-time leader there. But he just seems to finish, feels like top three every single year there.
True.
I don't know. Oh, now I guess we'll talk about Corey LaJoie and Kyle Busch.
Oh, my goodness.
And that whole fiasco.
Yeah, so what I saw was a bad block gone wrong.
I wouldn't even say it was a bad block.
But even then, it looked like it was in more simpler terms, it's just racing. Mm-hmm. And contact.
It was your normal Pocono restart.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's getting what they can get, and around goes Kyle Busch. And you've seen it a couple times at Pocono. Usually not collecting everybody like everybody, a bowling ball,
but
they'll go down into the grass and they just go right up the racetrack. We've seen it with Austin Dillon. We saw it with Jimmy Johnson. We've seen it with, I think, Bubba Wallace at one point. Aim for the grass to try and slow down. And
I was glad I was finally able to get that Kyle Busch interview because I know your sister wanted one. Obviously, you probably wasn't That was a very happy Cowbush too, at the infield care center. Very happy Cowbush.
Yeah,
very happy. No, he was definitely very visibly frustrated, which rightfully so.
Yeah,
I mean, he went to block Corey LaJoie and LaJoie bumped him, and then LaJoie got mad that he bumped Cowbush and spun him, and then took out 5 or 6 cars with him when Cowbush came back up the track and collecting them like a bowling ball. And I don't know if the TV feed could pick it up, because sometimes they can, sometimes they can't. But the crowd reaction on the wreck, when Corey LaJoie spun Kyle Busch, you had the fans cheering. And then when Kyle Busch came back up the track and collected 6 cars like a bowling ball, like you said, then you hear all the fans go, oh, whoa, and they're all standing up. I don't know if NBC was able to pick that up on audio. On the TV, but I know watching it back on YouTube and Twitter that you can hear the fans a little bit reacting to it. But, yeah, definitely a chaotic scene. And a couple of my team, the team at Essentially Sports, talked to Corey LaJoie after the race on pit road, and he said he was not apologizing because he did nothing wrong. So, yeah, he definitely saw it at a different, obviously different perspective, which usually what happens. Not a shocker that he was like, "Yeah, I didn't mean to do that."
I don't know. It's tough because, as you said, every side's gonna see their own thoughts and such. But it's one of those things where my opinion is it comes down to a racing deal.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was the Busch. I think the block was a racing deal. You can kind of see Corey LaJoie take a right on Kyle Busch and send him. If you watch it back,
I'm pulling the video up.
You can see Corey LaJoie take a right after the block and send Kyle, because especially with Corey LaJoie, he kind of said he did. He said he wasn't apologizing, and on Zach McPenney, he kind of said the same thing. Corey LaJoie said on his Zach McPenney's podcast yesterday that the only thing he feels bad for is that he collected other cars. So he pretty much meant to do it, but he didn't mean to collect other cars with it.
Well, I mean, okay, so I'm looking back at this replay on YouTube and slow this down a little bit. You're gonna see LaJoie's gonna jet out, like you said, typical Pocono restart. It's fan out. Kyle Busch turns left and hits him. Turned left and made contact with him.
No.
And then LaJoie comes up and gets him.
Kyle Busch was in front of LaJoie before LaJoie hit, before they contact the original contact.
You're right, but he still turned. He still turned right there. So you're going to see LaJoie. He's going to step out. And right there, Busch with a little bit of a lake block.
Oh, yeah. And then LaJoie.
And then LaJoie comes up and says, okay.
No, takes a right, and bam.
Whether or not he meant to take him out make just contact with him.
Which has since NASCAR has said they are not penalizing Corey LaJoie at all.
I agree with it. It's a racing. Again, I think this is a racing deal. You know, and yes, it's as LaJoie said, you know, it's a bummer that he went up and collected 5 other cars.
I have 3 interviews from this whole situation with Stenhouse, Burton, and Busch. I guess I'd be allowed to because it's kind of a media member. Should I play the audio, Kyle Busch, of what he had to say about what he thinks?
Here, hold on. Hang on. Hold on, folks.
Here, you want me to find it?
I'm going to your settings.
Oh.
Is what I'm going to do. As we'll connect them. And where's Bluetooth? There it is. Okay, go ahead. See if this works.
All right, do you want me to play the whole thing? Because I have the whole interview.
How long is it?
A minute.
Sure, go for it.
Okay.
See if this works.
Did you think LaJoie was a little too aggressive? It doesn't matter what I think.
With the issue before the race, is you just kind of just trying to hang on, see what's the best you can do today?
Yeah, I don't know exactly what the problem was with the issue before the race, but I doubt it had anything to do with our race car, and they were able to get it fixed, so thankful that we found it ahead of time, and we got to have a chance to go race today.
You mentioned a steering issue in qualifying. Did it get better during the race at all?
They had it fixed prior to qualifying, so everything was all fine with that.
Could you tell LaJoy was coming up into you, or was it a surprise when, that he got clipped there on that restart?
Of course, you have mirrors and cameras and everything else, so you try to get in front of the run that's coming, and I was trying to get in front of that run, and sometimes some don't lift. Kamikaze.
Did anything happen before that could have led to that?
Did you see where I was running today?
Okay, guys, we're done. Thank you.
So, obviously, you can tell he was not very pleased.
Yeah, he was frustrated for sure. And, I mean, I could also, I'm not going to lie, looking back at the video, I could see where it looked like, you know, he was trying to get in front of a run and all that, and I get it. But I don't know. Who's the other one you said you had?
I had Ricky and Burton.
Oh, from the wreck itself.
From the wreck itself.
All right, last two, and then unfortunately, I think we're going to have to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What was your point? What was your point of view of the wreck? Obviously, not of your own doing, but...
Yeah, I had no view of it. Just running the top and, kind of started on the bottom and wiped us up the track. So I never saw anything.
And the funny thing is, before the Ricky said that was Ricky Stenhouse, before he said that, he made a joke saying, the 8 got me again. So, actually, I think I probably have that if I edit back the video to the very beginning. Mm-hmm.
Got me again in turn one.
No, yes. I'm just kidding. I've got no clue what happened. And then this was Burton about just how good of a car. I mean, he didn't really talk about how good the wreck. He kind of just talked about how good of a car he had. Mm-hmm. But
and that's kind of things that happen in life in general, right? Just got to keep going.
You said you had a good car pretty much all day. Would you have better short-term speed or long-run speed?
To be honest, I don't think it mattered a whole lot. I think it just mattered when we got clean air. It was insane. I would get clear of somebody and be stuck behind them for 5 laps and then just drive away. And you look in your camera and they're way back and it's like, oh my gosh, it just so hard to pass. And obviously qualifying 22nd wasn't the best spot, so I need to get that better, and then hopefully we can hold on better and finish these races in one piece and up front.
So obviously I would play the LaJoy one too, but I kind of just said, he pretty much just said, I'm not apologizing for what I did,
right?
But I watched the Burton one back, and I just love how he said, oh my gosh. It's like, but it goes to show you how clean air was like everyone's best friend, which it usually is, but Pocono definitely. Especially with them.
Yeah.
I just love how he said, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I look in the mirror and I was like, oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, I mean, it definitely is one of those things where, like I said, I view it as a racing deal, but I could also understand from LaJoy's point of view where it's just kind of like, I'm going for a position, you move down. Like, if you had held your line, we probably would have been side by side, but you moved down. And again, we'll never know. You know, who it is in the, in the moment and all that. And who knows if maybe Kyle Busch's spotter said, you're clear, and then he wasn't. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But definitely one of those crazy racing deals.
Definitely.
So any final thoughts here on the Cup Series race?
I thought for what it was, I thought it was good. I thought the track was just, I thought it was just racy all weekend. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, obviously... You can't really leave Pocono without any kind of drama. So you had it in two series.
True.
So I think it was just classic Pocono. I thought it was generally good. Granted, I had a different kind of perspective from what the TV audience saw.
Right.
But I thought being there, I thought it was good.
That's awesome. No, I'm happy to hear you had a great experience as well as just in general a good weekend overall.
Pocono was never on my bucket list for tracks to go to. I mean, I would want to go to it, but definitely now that I went, I would definitely 100% go again, whether as a fan or just at work. Cool. As a media member, definitely a track I'd go to just to experience again.
definitely a track I want to go to. I'd love to bring the camper even. But anyways, looking.
I also want to mention that it was sold out on Sunday.
True.
76,500 something.
That's amazing.
Complete. So the camping was sold out. So the grandstands were sold out on Sunday. So it was a complete sellout. So that's amazing. Good. Second year in a row for Pocono.
That's amazing. That's super cool. So looking ahead here to Indianapolis, who is, give me your top three picks for the Cup Series?
Denny Hamlin.
Okay.
I can't even remember who's good on the Indy Oval anymore. It's new to a lot of people now.
It's been a while.
Hamlin, Blaney, Truex.
Okay. I'm going to go with Keselowski.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with Briscoe. And my long shot's going to be Byron. Only because I saw something where Gordon won in 94, again in 04, and I think he won in 14.
So 10 years, every 10 years for...
Not to be, you know, superstitious here, but if the 24 wins in a number 4, another 4, 94, 04, 14, 24, I'm just saying. But anyways, Jordan, I want to say thank you for jumping on. We can talk about this stuff forever, so that's why I'm like, all right, We should probably wrap it up. But anyways, thank you for jumping on. I'm glad to hear you had a great weekend, and it should be fun going forward. Trucks are at IRP, Xfinity, and
Cup. First race of their playoffs, I believe. No, it's not. Nope. Not this year.
Yeah, they got two more to go.
Yep.
And then Xfinity and Cup are on the oval. Not the road course, the oval.
First time in 4 years. Mm-hmm. First time since 2020 that they're on the oval.
Yep. So we'll have to see how that goes.
So technically, Denny Hamlin was the defending winner at the oval. No, actually, no, never mind. He didn't even win the oval. It was Harvick, I think.
All right. Well, folks, want to say thank you all so much for tuning in. Don't forget to follow us on social media, as well as share and send along our podcast to your friends to share and spread the word. Bring Racing Hotspot to the light. Want to say thank you to 603 United for giving us the spot here in their hangout.
Give Racing Spot hot spot the spotlight so that Devin can get a media.
Yeah, we'll membership. See. We'll see. Anyways, for Jordan, I'm Devin. Have a great night, everybody, and we'll see you all real soon for the next episode of Racing Hotspot.